Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, earlier in the week, our bad martini was the complete disaster that is Venezuela, given its headlong descent into socialism and all the horrific things that come along with that. Our good martini today also comes from South America, but this one comes from Brazil. Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff bowed out defiantly on Thursday, suspended from office after the Senate in Brazil voted to put her on trial for breaking budget laws in a historic decision brought on by a deep recession and a corruption scandal. The BBC report points out that she was accused of illegally manipulating finances to hide a growing public deficit ahead of her re-election in 2014, which she denies. The vote was overwhelming, 55-22. She'll now be suspended while the Olympics are going on down in Rio, and according to all reports, she's not likely to win her trial either. So, Jim, a leftist is caught being corrupt, and there's actually punishment for it. Look at that.
Greg, this is being greeted with really mixed feelings in the United States. I was just on Capitol Hill. Most of the responses from members of both parties was, wait a minute, you're saying lying about the deficit, the debt, and the budget is illegal? Wait, what? I thought that was required. So between Brazil and Venezuela, you'd think South America would have no shortage of teachable moments in recent months and years. This is coming at a terrific time for Brazil. It's not like they're going to be the world spotlight or anything with the Olympics coming up. But I already have my, Greg, I've already gotten my stuff, my promotional material from NBC. The real Olympics catch the fever, I understand is the slogan they have there. So hopefully people will say, hey, you got to pay attention to the budget. Somewhere Greece is saying, yeah, tell us about it.
I'm not usually a big fan of copying laws from other countries, but I think this might be one we would not want to look into. But it'll never pass, obviously, because you mentioned at the start that neither party would probably want that. All right, on to the bad martini now, and in the least possible surprising bad martini of all time, this is the Washington Examiner version of the story from Paul Bedard. The Washington Post has built a sizable army of reporters to dig into every facet of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's life, urged on by new owner Jeff Bezos to reveal everything about the potential nominees. Post associate editor Bob Woodward revealed Wednesday that the Post has assigned 20 staffers to Trump. In addition, the paper plans a book. Quote, there's a lot we don't know, he told the National Association of Realtors convention in Washington. We have 20 people working on Trump. We're going to do a book. We're doing articles about every phase of his life, unquote. He says that he has begun looking into Trump's New York real estate deals and says it's more complex than the CIA. On Wednesday, the Post poured on several Trump stories, including a deep dig into his sex talk on radio host Howard Stern's show. He also said the paper is trying to get to the essence of Hillary Clinton. But Woodward dismissed suggestions that Clinton used a personal server to distribute classified information, saying it's no big deal because there was no intent on her part. So obviously they're planning very balanced coverage here, Jim, but for the Trump folks who thought that the Post might do him any favors, not going to happen.
You know, Greg, this is where I'm supposed to complain about media bias, but I'm just going to make one observation. Greg, how many Americans feel like they don't have a good idea of who Trump is, what he's done, his moral character, the kind of person, how he treats people? He's not exactly been an obscure figure. And while I'm sure that, you know, all this investigating is going to unveil some new details, some new aspects of his life. I think most people feel like, okay, no, he's 69 years old. He's been in the national headlines since the early 80s. He's had several books written about him already. I kind of have this curious about what exactly they think they're going to find dramatically different other than his tax returns, which, of course, he refuses to release. But so if you have a suspicion that the national media didn't want to look at Trump too hard during the primary, they thought he'd be a disaster for Republicans, and that after he was the nominee, they would really dig into him and showcase his seedy side. Well, you have one more big piece of evidence pointed here in the behavior of the Amazon.com/Washington Post. And I have this nagging feeling that, like, they'll do it for Hillary. Hillary would be another figure who I think most Americans feel like they know her. I feel like they have a pretty good sense of her moral character here. I'm not sure there's going to be any more great, huge, surprising revelations unless they happen to reveal, Greg, as it's been rumored, that at some point Hillary Clinton did actually use a secure server once. That would be a shock.
You already kind of alluded to this, but do you think, for the most part, voters have decided that everything about Trump is baked into the cake. I mean, if you come out with another affair, if you come out with another questionable deal or how he treated subcontractors, is that really going to radically change anyone's opinion of him? And that's a good question. They could be devoting a lot of resources to very little effect here.
You remember the old Saturday Live sketch with Phil Hartman with Reagan the mastermind?
Yes.
The popular perception is that Reagan was this, you know, genial dunce and this doddering old man who was happy and friendly. And the joke was, behind closed doors, he was this nefarious mastermind who knew all the details and, you know, of planning operations against the Sandinistas all around the world. He knew everything about Iran-Contra. And his aides were having a hard time keeping up with them. And he's like, look, I'm the only one who knows, and I'm the only one who needs to know. If we reveal something like that that really plays against type, Craig, then it will be a surprise.
Excellent reference. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And hopefully our listeners got to see Jim's appearance on CNN earlier today, because if anyone predicted the outcome of today's Trump-Ryan meeting on Capitol Hill any better, I don't know how they could have done it. But the ballyhooed summit today, Jim said it was the biggest summit since Malta. The media just swarming around the RNC headquarters as Trump and Ryan met. We talked earlier in the week about how Ryan said he's not there yet when it comes to supporting Donald Trump. And as expected, things are looking a little bit closer to unity, although not officially there yet. Jim, you had an analogy on CNN of this as a date, and that was before we got comments like this. First of all, here's RNC Chairman Reince Priebus talking to Dana Bash about what it was like in the meeting.
It was great, and I think it had very good chemistry between the two of them.
Very good chemistry. And here's Paul Ryan up on Capitol Hill referencing what he thought about where they stand and where they are and some of their differences.
I think we're off to an encouraging start. It is important that we get ourselves to full strength so that we can win in the fall, because the stakes could not be higher. But it takes more than 45 minutes, Mark.
And so with all the networks saying that this is the most important day of Donald Trump's political life, regardless of the 40-some states that have already voted and put him into the role of presumptive nominee, Jim, this is the biggest thing ever.
Don't you hate it when all those hack pundits just run in front of the cameras to overhype something and just lather on cable news, acting like something, you know, meeting between two guys is just the biggest deal ever? Greg, those guys are the worst. That's his observation there. Also, they kept using these dating or marriage metaphors. Greg, I don't know about you. I don't know what you've heard about me, but I'm not the kind of guy who just gives up his endorsement on the first date, okay? At the very least, you have to pick up the tab for surf and turf. Ryan has the problem of being, you know, generally a pretty principled conservative who has strong disagreements with Trump on entitlement reform, on the budget, on, you know, on trade, and arguably on certain portions of the Trump immigration vision, i.e. banning everybody in one religion. So Ryan can't just say, no, everything's fine, he's great. You know, he can't pull a Jindal or Perry and say, well, he's not Hillary Clinton, so that's good enough for me. So he's got to at least string it out. Now, my sense is that by the time the convention comes around, Ryan will find some fig leaf to say, aha, Trump has convinced me he's a sufficiently consistent conservative that I can support him. Also, I use the other metaphor of, like, it's one of those old chain gang movies where two guys are handcuffed together and they can't stand each other.
Yes.
Because, you know, Paul Ryan is not going to get anything he wants done under President Hillary Clinton. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. He might get some of what he wants under Trump. It's a very open question there. And Donald Trump is not going to get a lot of what he wants under a Democratic House, although I think you probably could argue there's maybe a little bit of overlap there. So ultimately, these guys are better off with each other. They're going to have to cooperate with each other. And the other great point is that neither one of these guys can get what they want until January 2017. So there's no point in really spending a lot of time arguing about entitlement reform, because entitlement reform is going nowhere. There's not going to be any changes to immigration reform before January. There's not going to be any changes to our trade bills before January. So that's all kind of back burner, and they can hash it out once they have a Republican president and a Republican Congress. Now, having said that, the other question is going to be, you know, Paul Ryan doesn't want to have to be asking for, you know, the guy you endorsed just, you know, said something that sounds cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs yesterday. You know, what do you think of this? Do you rescind your endorsement or something like that? So every time Trump says something controversial, Ryan could say, yeah, that's why I'm not there, you know, and hold it off. And, you know, but ultimately he's got an R after his name. Trump's got an R after his name. And they're probably going to hug it out because, you know, that's what almost every other Republican has done. And I don't think Paul Ryan wants to be the guy saying, look, conservative Republicans of America, we cannot accept this. We have to find some third party option. Let me just blow up the party.
They'll hug it out. No one hugs like Trump. He's the best.
Huge hugs. The only guy who hugs any harder, Craig, Corey Lewandowski.
No wonder he got hired. That's maybe how he'll pick the vice president, too. Who knows? But on that note, enjoy your day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.